Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better, you really can do it. But nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
Hello, and welcome to Vacation Station, hosted by Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazines.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to Big Blend Radio's second Friday food, wine, and travel show with the International Food, Wine, Travel Writers Association. We love our second Fridays because we get to chat with the travel writers who are all members of IFTWA. We say IFTWA instead of International Food, Wine, Travel Writers Association. Such a big name, but it's a cool name, and they've got cool people that are all part of it. So if you're a destination, a writer, a photographer, blogger, winemaker, you want to check them out, go to IFWTWA.org. I was there. But today yes. We're excited to welcome back travel writer Linda Milks. She's telling us about her big five wow moments in Jordan. I mean, that is an epic bucket list adventure. And she did it. You can see her story right on the homepage of blendradioandtv.com if you're listening right now when this airs live, second Friday of January here. It'll also be featured in our upcoming issue of Vacation Station Travel Magazine, so check that out. And also keep up with her at toastingfoodwineandtravel.com. So welcome back, Linda. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
We're doing good. So Toasting Food, Wine, and Travel, you go to Jordan. Did you get to have some wine?
Oh, yes, we did. The first night we went to a wine shop, and the winemaker, the family, it's a family place since I think about 1956 that have grown grapes. As a matter of fact, grapes have grown in the Jordan area for centuries. It's probably next to Georgia. It's probably the second oldest place to grow grapes. And so we met with the owner, one of the owner winemakers, and were able to sample his grapes. I think they have like 400 acres. It's like an enormous amount of grapes. And we sampled different wines, and we tried Akara too, which is a spirit that is known in Jordan, I think, and the Middle East. So it was, and then we went to his place called the Bar in the Back and had dinner. Oh, it was like an outdoor place. Oh yeah, mm-hmm. It was very cool. And we had small plates and paired with his wines. It was lovely.
Oh, because I've heard that Jordan is really one of the most ancient places you can go for wine. And why not? You know, it sounds good. And I know you really wanted to go on this trip, and I think it's exciting. IFTWA, this is the second trip. And you're on the board, right?
Yes.
Of IFTWA. And yeah. So that's pretty big, getting this kind of trip together, getting the travel writers, getting everybody together to make it happen. Let's put it that way.
Especially
because
your
group, yeah, it's group travel. But I think now, like, a lot of people are going to go, like, you're going to Jordan. How did you feel as a woman going to Jordan? Did you have family and friends go, like, are you nuts going there? Like, I personally would go, you know. I don't care where I go. I'm going. I mean, I care, but I mean, I'm not going to let anybody tell me yes or no. And I think every place is dangerous and good at the same time. Just kind of been there, done that in my life. So
you always have to watch yourself.
I think that it would be more difficult if we would have gone to Israel and Jordan, although I have a good friend who just did that and on a tour, so she was fine too. I I knew that this other group had gone. It's been about 4 years ago, but I knew they'd gone, and they one of them in particular, Linda Kassam, told me it was like life-changing. And that's part of the reason I really wanted to go. And when we got there, there were eight women, and we were met by someone that helped us check in, go through our customs with our passports. And then we were put on a van with our guide. So we were with someone the whole time, but I never felt threatened in Jordan anywhere.
So one guide the whole time throughout. That's a good thing to have.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, I was.
I remember Diva Linda coming on the show talking about her. And I was like, the diva got on a camel. The day the diva got on the camel, I thought that was it. The skies changed, the world parted. I mean, and then I saw you on a camel.
Yes.
I mean, it's not as easy as everybody thinks.
No.
Oh, it isn't. And it's not very comfortable, I can tell you that.
No, and they bite. They do bite.
There were four all hooked together in a row. And so that helped. But you know, when you get on, they raise up their back legs first. So you have to lean back, because otherwise you're going to be thrown forward. And then they raise up their front legs. Mm-hmm. You have to lean way back. And then you start the journey, and there's no stirrups or anything like that. Like you have
stirrups.
Yeah, you just hang your legs, hang down. Oh. And believe me, I was like,
that's
nuts.
Kind of freebasing, man. Okay, that's so like in Kenya, freebasing.
No, in Kenya, I had stirrups.
On a camel?
Yeah, and that's how the camel bit my foot, because he could find the stirrup. He knew exactly where it was.
Oh,
he
just
and it didn't bite hard.
He didn't want the stirrup, so they know in Jordan not to do that.
So it's good not to have stirrups.
Well, we started at 5:45 in the morning, so maybe the camels were still a little groggy.
They weren't metal stirrups like horses, they're leather.
How did that feel too, just flying across there and then suddenly getting up for these camel rides early in the morning?
Cool. Yeah, that was like a little bit later on our journey. We actually went out the day before and saw they were, you know, giving tourist camel rides, and we all are going, oh, we want to do this. And our guide said, no, it's hot and those camels are tired. You'd be a lot better off to do it in the morning, which was great advice. So they came before sunrise, and four of us got on camels and went out. And so we saw the sunrise in the desert. And that's part of, in the Wadi Rum, that's part of one of my wow experiences, was to have that morning adventure going out on camels. And there were three men sitting around in a circle who made a fire for us. And then they put the tea on, and we had tea and some kind of biscuit as the sun was coming up. And just amazing. Yeah.
Nice. Wow. And so when you think about this, I just had a conversation with a friend who's talking about, you know, going on guided tours. How important is it when you go to a place like Jordan or anywhere for you to have a guided tour versus just going willy-nilly on your own and hoping everything works out?
I just think that this guide was very knowledgeable about Jordan. I mean, he was a native Jordanian. He knew the history of everything. I'd have to have been an amazing history major, which I'm not, to have any of the knowledge. And I think it would have taken me months to really get up to speed to what he was able to tell us just from his own personal knowledge. So it was very important for us.
I think that's something about these kind of trips. When you go on a bucket list, you need to go beyond the visitor center or the book.
Yes.
Because you can read it all that you want, but when you're standing there, you want to actually have that understanding when you're there. Like behind us, we have this photo for those who are watching on video on YouTube or Facebook, the
treasury
Petra, the monastery,
the monastery.
So when you're there in Petra, do you understand what the monastery is? But in a book, now you're gonna have to look it up. You don't want to do that on your trip unless you've researched it. But the connection, I don't know, I think if you have someone there, it really tells you while you're there, it really gets to you.
There's a book, you know, speaking of Petra, there's a book called Married to a Bedouin, and it's fascinating. This woman was in her 20s. And I think most of the book takes place maybe 1975 to 1980s. And I read it after I got home. I love the book. It was very fascinating. And she talked about how the Bedouins, they lived in these caves, and some of them still do. I don't know, not legally, but some of them still live in the caves, but how they were all in those caves and then they were moved out eventually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting history.
Book. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And I think that's a thing too, is reading books, and it's not always like the guidebooks. It's always those personal encounters.
Yes.
People are going, right? Do you read biographies, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. That's her story of being married to a Bedouin. She was from, I think it was New Zealand, and she had three children with him. And would go sometimes, I think half the year or less, back to New Zealand. And then they'd move back into Petra, and they had, I don't know if they had one or two, I think they might've had two caves that they lived in. And she talked about the cave.
She was
a nurse, and she talked about some of the caves were painted on the inside, so they weren't quite as primitive. And actually, one of our group made friends with a Bedouin that lives in cave, and they have I think they have electricity. I think they have a TV.
But in the cave.
Yeah, they legally are not supposed to be there, but I guess they just let them live there unless they step out from Petra, and then they can evict them and keep them out.
Do they have a door to close to the cave? Like,
you know, some of what I was reading in her book, some of them had windows or doors. I didn't see that. I mean, what we didn't see where they were
living.
You're
in the historical park, like the,
right.
It's almost like a national park. Kind of
I think I think where they live is more on the backside of where the tourists go. Mm.
And so where you were, I mean, can you envision living there?
No. Never lived in a cave.
Like trying to sort this out.
No, listen, Linda's into Meculeland with wineries and all of that. She's like, heck no. But so think about it. What made you want to go? And how are your feelings coming back? I mean, and everyone, the five wows. I mean, to me, I want to hear your experience. You wrote a great article, and everyone can get into that. But
membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel anytime.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better, you really can do it. But nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
Advocate for those who need support and make a difference in your community. Earn a Bachelor of Social Work from Grand Canyon University. GCU is a premier private Christian university offering online social work programs with affordable tuition and personalized support. In addition, you can earn your Master of Social Work by completing the Bachelor of Social Work plus just one additional year instead of two. Find your purpose. Visit gcu.edu/socialwork to learn more.
Going there, what made you want to go, and then your feeling, like even coming home. So let's start with that. What made you go? Like, why go?
I've never done any Middle Eastern travel at all. And I've done a lot of like Italy and France and Spain, but not anywhere like the Middle East. And I really wanted to be exposed to it. But Jordan is a very safe place to travel. They're not warring people. And I knew from Linda Kassam that it was an amazing event. So I just wanted to be exposed to something different than what I'd seen. And so I would learn something. And, you know, I always enjoy the food of the area. I haven't spent that much time in a desert. And we spent one night in a dome in the desert. And that was interesting too.
Yeah, like a dome tent. Yeah.
Yeah. And they did have a restaurant there. So it was, you know, it was made for tourists, but it was still interesting to be in the middle of the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the food like for you?
Well, that's different, isn't it? Yeah, the food, actually, their diet is very healthy. A lot of vegetables, and hummus. And we did get a little tired of the same, it seemed like the same food over and over and over again. Mm. But as far as healthy, very healthy and not that spicy or anything at all. And
it wasn't
surprising.
Yeah, it wasn't spicy. They use a lot of yogurt I can't remember the name of it, but there's a yogurt where they strain it more times. It's almost like a cottage cheese, and that goes into one of their dishes too. So you get that yogurt, that kind of a little bit of sour creaminess in different dishes, and parsley and tabbouleh that we're familiar with, and the flatbreads. We call it pita bread. They have different flatbreads, different names for them. One day when we were out in the desert, we and it was a Bedouin area, and he took us to what was a luxury camp, Shara luxury camp, and which was amazing too. It's totally green and solar, and they use candles at night, and
gotta see the stars, right?
Yeah And I would have stayed there in a heartbeat, but that wasn't part of our stay. But anyway, he took us,
he's like, dang it, come on, dude.
I know it was wonderful. I would go there, it was beautiful. But he took us to a Bedouin tent, and the Bedouin gentleman that was there made bread for us, and it was just made of salt, water, and wheat. And wheat's a big deal there. Everything's wheat. So he made this bread, and then I think it was his mother cooked it outside the tent. So after he'd kneaded it and everything, she cooked it outside the tent. There was a hole in the ground. It had ashes, and then she put the bread in, covered it with more ashes. And then when it was done, she pulled it out and beat it to get the ashes off and brought it in. And we all loved it.
I love it.
That's very like African to us.
Yeah, that's very African.
Our experiences. Yeah. Nancy, doesn't that sound familiar?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
We used to have chapati, which is a leavened staple. And to this day, like you asked, like, I don't even eat bread that much anymore. I'm like, we make tortillas all the time now as we travel, especially easier. And it's like, as soon as we change that, even my body was gone back to living in East Africa as a kid. Yeah. You know, it's like, because we used to have chapatis, bread, water, flour. I mean, not bread, water, flour, water, a little bit of salt. Oil, kind of salt. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just how it's needed and how you prepare it. And it's I think these ancient cultures have done it for frigging centuries, you know, not decades, not years, it's centuries.
Yes.
And
yes.
When you have that kind of bread, it just is better on your body in some way. And love a good sourdough. Thank you very much. Sorry,
but there's never go away. No, but there's no unnatural yeast. There's just no yeast in it and makes it far healthier.
But I still have my beer, but they use the yeast for beer. See, a lot of
but that's a natural yeast. That's a natural yeast. It's not like what we would get here.
Yeah. Oh my, we're gonna have a war of yeast. But this is cool what you had. I mean, so going there, I mean, did you have a culture shock going there? Like, did you getting off the plane and getting into Jordan, like that flight over, get there and go, did you second guess yourself at any point?
I didn't second guess myself, but getting off the airplane, the airports are just crazy. There's people, just tons of people lined up going in different directions. It's very, very compact, and all kinds of people, all kinds of talking, all kinds of noise. So that when you get off a plane and then you're confronted with that, but we knew that we had a guide and a host that was going to meet us. So that was, and there were eight of us together to help. So
that's a good point, though, to for mm-hmm. people going over, whether they're traveling solo or with guides, to expect it.
Yes.
To prepare yourself. That's yes. a really good tip.
In Kenya, when it was time to board, the first time that I went, everybody started running. And so I'm thinking, what's wrong? Is there a bomb in the airport? They're running to the plane. And I didn't realize that you had to run to the plane because you have a ticket. But as far as what your seat number is, nobody cares.
Oh,
so if you don't run to the plane, then you get whatever seats left.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So now I was like, what?
Well, so
we
flew on Royal Jordanian, and it was pretty, it was a little different than, I mean, I was in charge of seeing that everyone's tickets and everything was organized, and it was different because they put them, us, we didn't really get a formal ticket. We got a piece of paper that had our e-ticket numbers, and they were all lumped together. So we had to be together because we didn't have individual tickets.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, because of doing the media trip. Yeah, that's a little different. But so that's different going. But what was it like on their planes, even?
Their planes were fine. I think the only strange experience I had was that, and I don't think it's just Royal Jordanian. I think it's a certain kind of plane that I sat in the bulkhead, which I thought would be great. Well, they bring out a bassinet, and they hook the bassinet onto the bulkhead. So, and I had a child who was probably 12 or 14 months that's sitting in that bassinet, sitting, because he was laying too some, but sitting, which is supposed to be for a baby, I think. And his feet are dangling, and I can't get out to go to the bathroom. I can't anything. I was trapped because I was next to the window. And
Linda went into the bassinet. No.
I know. It was like I could barely get the arm up for my tray or anything because the bassinet was in the way. But I think it's a particular kind of plane. I don't think it's necessarily Royal Jordanian. So I'm going to not sit in the bulkhead again.
That's an interesting thing. Yeah.
Yeah, he cried the whole time.
No.
Wine.
I've had those planes. And then you ask for a wine. I remember when we came over from, you know, England to here, South Africa to England to here. And I sat next to a woman with a baby that was crying. And she started like, shut up. And I'm like, you can't be like that to the baby, but I also want you to really shut up. And I'm not being mean to the baby. I mean, I understand it. We all are tired of this flight because we were being delayed and all, like, wham. And so we wanted wine. Nancy gets wine. I order wine, and they asked me for my passport. And I said, oh, yeah, sure. Give you my passport, and I'll tell you I'm 19. And they looked at me like, well, you should know better. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm legal. No, not in this country.
In South Africa, she was up, legal. I was legal. To drink.
And I'm like, I moved to a country that I'm not legal to drink. What? Uh-huh. And legal in South Africa pretty much means when you're 16, because you can with family at that era.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a long time ago. And Nancy sits there and goes, cheers to you. Ha ha.
Cheers.
Down the aisle. And I'm looking at her, she's like, ha ha. Ha ha and ha ha, not even just one ha ha, just it was like it was mean, but eventually.
Well, I decided I need something stronger than wine, so I ordered a gin and tonic, and I heard the two flight attendants go, she wants a gin and tonic.
Whoa.
So I guess that was a big deal.
That's a big deal for a woman.
So Jordan, because let's talk about that. So the alcohol thing, so wine is a big deal. So, I mean, what was on menus other than food in regards to libations?
Well, we were at hotels, so they did we paid for our own wine, which is not unusual for an IFTA trip that you pay for. Mm. If you have alcohol, you pay for it. So it was on the menu. There wasn't a wide variety, but it was on the menu. There was also a drink, I think it's called Lemonada, our tour guide had it one day, and it was, I think it was either lemon or lime and mint, and it was like a slushy. It looked really interesting, but until, you know, we'd all ordered and things, we weren't aware that was one of the drinks there. So we didn't try it, but I have a photo of it. It's beautiful. And it sounds really good.
You could put some little gin in there.
Do you think it's got like gin or something in there? Or?
No. Because, I mean, most, you know, he was Muslim and they just don't drink alcohol. Mm-hmm. So that's, and there was a lot of tea everywhere we went. And the tea was actually very good. It was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think it was hibiscus is what they use a lot. And so it was really good.
I'm a huge hibiscus tea.
That's nice.
I mean, and it's so good for your body too.
It's really nice.
And it perks you up and it makes you happy. And when you look at a hibiscus flower, aren't you happy? I mean, hibiscus is happy, and they do it in Mexico too.
Yeah. Well, you know, we started out as a group being leery of drinking water, and I still don't know about the water part of it. But and then, so then, well, maybe we shouldn't be drinking tea. And then we didn't want to be, you know, unkind.
So basically, you all just drank wine the entire time.
No. Bottle. We drank bottled water. But then, as we got more into the trip, then we started drinking the tea, and we all seemed to be fine.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel anytime.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better, you really can do it. But nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
Yeah,
because it's boiled.
Because it's heated.
Water's boiled.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, you don't know. And that's why we want to have these conversations, is for people to understand. You know, I don't want to ever scare people of travel, but if you're over paranoid or over scared, like, you're not going to have a good trip. You know what
I mean? Right. So I think you have to be able to be welcome to trying different foods too. I think, I don't know if we had anything that terribly unusual. And I think there wasn't even that much lamb, which I think they do eat a lot of lamb. I think they may have toned it down for Americans. And I'm fine with lamb, but, and we didn't have goat, which I think is a pretty common thing there too.
Yeah, we're used to that too. And also, that's the thing. I think that nowadays, going international, you can go get the food that you're used to in America, because we've become such a global society, which is wonderful. We have so many more food options to it, and more friends of different cultures that can teach us different things. And so when you go to a different country like Jordan, which is on that list of remote and bucket list, you know, we all want to go. And it, I think, you know, if we've tasted some, we can get our, or we can get our senses kind of stimulated and ready. It's never going to be perfectly the same once you're in the country, because it, their ingredients are not going to be the same. I mean, they're just doing the best they can in this country to be Jordanian. I mean, we've had Jordanian musicians on our show and stuff over the years.
Cool.
It's very rare that we get someone, Lebanon and Jordan are kind of, you know, the two. And Israel, of course, we've covered for years. And that, I don't want to go into that drama, but that's their drama, you know, it's not ours. And you know, I feel for people and war and things, but
when you're talking about musicians, that one of my other experiences, wow, experiences was that through local eyes. And it was a sister and
tour
brother.
Company.
It was a sister and brother. I think he was 27, she might have been 24. She was dressed in very American jeans and things like that. And she didn't have a hijab on. She said when she went to visit her parents, she wore one just out of respect to her parents. But I don't think in daily life she does. And she had just graduated from college, which is really wonderful to hear that happened. And that was in Amman is where they were. And they did, at the very end, they did a little rap for us of a song that they loved that was Jordanian. They played the music, and then they together, we saw them both go like this, the brother and sister back and forth when they did the rap, and it was a song about their country. It was so wonderful.
Nice.
So, you know, that's the thing. So we're at a change then.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing it in Iran, Iraq. We're seeing this change, especially for women.
Yes.
Going there, that's what I was, you know, I bet people are concerned, like going over to Jordan at this time as a woman, especially. Mm-hmm. So you felt okay and felt safe?
Yeah, we went to two different, most of the time you see men everywhere, not women on the streets. We, mm-hmm. in the hotels where we were, there would be a couple of women working in the restaurant area, but mainly it's all men. But we did go to two restaurants that, restaurants, I guess is what you call them. They were homes where they served us meals, and they do this for tourists. And it's a way for them, these women, to earn money and establish a little bit of their own independence and help pay for the kids' college and things. So one of them was the first one in her area to do it. And then she has 15 women who now do that too. And they come to her facility where she serves, and we ate outside a beautiful picnic area with the cat on the table.
Oh, now you're gonna feel at home with the cool cats, right? Are everywhere. We could all, and they're in Petra too, by the way.
Yes. Oh, I know, I've got photos of them in Petra. But anyway, she also has a little gift shop, so they would make canned goods, and there's bracelets, there's rugs, things like that that these women have put in the shops as a way for them to earn money. So they're, you know, it's still cooking, it's still in their homes, but it's a step for sure in mm-hmm. their being able to have their own businesses.
That's oh awesome. My gosh.
This is so cool. It sounds similar to Kenya, Nancy, mm-hmm. and even early Absolutely. Days of South Africa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But women are, you know, what we yeah. learned in Africa is women were far more enterprising than the men. Mm-hmm. Far more mathematical in their brains were more cool. mathematical. They knew money, mm-hmm. and they didn't make mistakes with money like the men did.
Yeah,
they were on it with that, and they ran their households in a very clean and strict way. Mm-hmm. Their houses yeah. were really clean.
You know, the thing too, when you go back to history, like Africa, and I mean, these are neighboring countries, you know,
right.
yeah.
East Africa is very Muslim too. And
parts of it,
women, oh, from the Western civilization, it looks terrible. And it is in certain ways in different places and in different countries. So please, everyone, it's different everywhere. But women do have a lot more say than what people would understand inside a relationship, a Muslim relationship. And some really want to wear their outfits, and some people don't. And so it's at this point now of a change. And I think, you know, power to those who make a movement to go, I want to do this and be who they are, and power to those who want to stay the way they want to. It's kind
Our
of that
has been through that.
Yeah, it's not years we're, ago. We're still in a. It's still really happening right now mm-hmm. in different countries. So, mm-hmm. It's interesting to be part of it and see women grow. And women are still fighting, even in our own mm-hmm. country here in the States.
Absolutely,
acknowledge right. Like leave that out. So. You know, going to countries like Jordan and seeing women get to these places and start to be able to, did that make you feel good as a woman seeing that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Our, you know, we asked our guide was very good about taking questions, and we asked him, cause he's married, and we asked him about his wife and if she wore a hijab, and he said, when he first met her, she didn't. And then after time passed, she decided she wanted to, and she wanted to do it to show her religion is why she wanted to do it. So that is yes. one of the reasons they do it. And then, like I said, with the young girl, Lana, she wanted to do it when she went to see her parents, just to show respect for her parents. Mm-hmm. They probably know she doesn't wear it the rest of the time.
I interviewed a lady in Warda, who was a refugee here in this country. I mean, she went from Ethiopia down, her family, she walked basically all the way to South Africa. And we talked, and her family in South Africa actually got shot at I mean, it's crazy. It's a crazy story, and I encourage people to read her in read her book, her memoir. And she's about to become a doctor in this country.
Oh, cool!
In Minnesota, she moved to Minnesota, went through a lot of racism in our country, and she stood strong. And she's an amazing woman. And she is very. Her husband is actually in South Africa, and she's here because she's doing her doctorate. And it's the same thing. She's
amazing,
strong as a woman, but strong in her religion of Islam. And it's very hard for people to understand, but it's a very difficult thing. I always say you can't just blanket one thing or the other. And when you travel, the more you travel and immerse yourself in cultures and the people, have these interpersonal connections, you'll understand what people want to do. And if there's radicals of every religion and every belief who do things that we are against, that is okay to be against. But, you know, WARDA has a devout belief system that is about caring, kindness, loving, nothing about killing Americans and killing people.
Right. Yeah.
It's about love and kindness. And, I mean, she's becoming a doctor as a woman from a farm in Ethiopia where her grandfather stole her baby milk because they were dying and starving and he stole it from her.
Wow.
Yet she still loves him and forgives him for that. So, you know, we've got to look at this in so many different lights. And I think the beauty of you going to Jordan is to, especially as a woman, is showing we can do this and we can connect in these cultures. And I think a lot of times, honestly, the guides are this portal of connection more than anything. When you're in a car with a guide, you have these conversations that are deep and meaningful.
I agree. And it also, I think it's important to, as a tourist to another country, to know what their culture is and what, how to show respect for them when you're there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, if you went to Jordan and went against their culture, like that's not going to work out for you very well.
No. And it's just
probably won't get through checkout. No groceries for you.
It's not smart.
It's not smart. I mean, honestly, we're talking ancient history. And I think we have to. The only way this world is keeps spinning because nature does, but we have to somehow. Travel is going to knock you around.
Yeah.
Well, it's education.
It's going to take you to different places. And if you don't have the ability to change your mindset, you're never going to be a good traveler or understand travel. Like, honestly. And why do we travel? To change, don't we? To have a greater understanding.
Grow.
It's so much fun.
It's so much
interesting on so many levels.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the nature, the people, the history. There's just so many levels that you can go to the same place five or six times or more and always learn something new.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Very true. Yeah.
For you growing, what do you think you came out of Jordan really growing from?
I don't know. I think it's just like a different understanding of, well, I never knew people lived in caves, you know, but also those guys that are in caves and on mules, they have cell phones.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it is. And it's just, I mean, to see different cultures, just, you know, really awakening, and to see the women, those women that had the little restaurants in their homes, that was wonderful. They were warm, gracious. They'd figure to, I'm impressed that they figured out a way to make a business for themselves in a country where that didn't exist before. I was very impressed with that. I was impressed with how welcoming and warm everywhere we went, the people were. The last place we stayed at was the Hilton Dead Sea Resort and Spa. It was gigantic. It had probably four different levels to it to get down to the pools, and it just sprawled forever. And they put me in a room that I couldn't find because I don't have a great sense of direction anyway. And there is a poor little guy that was outside. It helped me find my room. And then he took my suitcase there the first time. And then every night when I go back, I couldn't find my room. And he would be there and show me where my room was.
Wow. So they already knew. They watched out for you.
Yeah. It was wonderful. I mean, I've never had a hotel experience where someone was so helpful and so responsive right away.
Wow. And so, cool. And then going through Jordan, like accommodation wise, what was that like for you? I know going to your final hotel, but what was it like? I mean, did you sleep in a cave?
No.
I had to ask.
Luckily for us, we had probably 5-star hotels. We stayed at 2 Mövenpicks, which I'd never heard of before. And they are gorgeous. They're decorated just like the country where they are, very lavish. They've got fountains inside. So, and then the breakfast buffet in particular went on and on and on, like a whole wall probably of desserts. And the one interesting thing, I mean, it was all interesting, but the whole thing of vegetable salads, the whole thing of, you know, like meats and cheeses and several kinds of yogurts. But the last place we stayed, which I think Mövenpick in Aqaba, they had this big copper pot with a big handle in it and some little plates around it. And I asked the chef what it was, and it's called Ful, I think is how it's pronounced, F-U-L. And it's a bean dish that's mashed up, and that's a breakfast dish that's served in in several Middle Eastern countries. And then you had all these little toppings that could go on it. That had tahini, it had olive oil, of course, and I don't remember all, but all kinds of toppings that could go on this ful, which is their, so what they eat for breakfast isn't necessarily, you know, cereal. It's a little more interesting, and we did get to see that. That was nice. We did go to a cooking kitchen.
Did you taste it?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I took it. It's just kind of bland. It needed things to go on top of it, like the olive oil everywhere, which is fine with me. And, you know, the tahini was good on it. Yeah, I did.
Cool. So you said a cooking school? You went to a cooking school?
Yeah, we went to a cooking. I think it was called a cooking kitchen. And so we were divided. Our group stayed together, but there were probably 4 other groups that were at tables of 8, and we made different things to eat, and we made tabbouleh at our table, tabbouleh, and nice. There was one that made a bread, some kind of a little pastry, and then what else? We had a variety. We made a dish too that was, I don't really know what it's called. It has hamburger. I've got the recipe, but it has hamburger on the bottom. And then they put potatoes and tomatoes on top of it. And it was good. Very good.
That sounds good.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So is that the Galsums? Galsums? I can't pronounce anything in your article. So
no.
I don't know. No offense to the Jordanian peoples. I'm just saying, I until I get there, I'll probably not really get it.
I think it's Galsum's Kitchen, but I'm not positive. Galsum's. No, it was called Petra. It was called Petra Kitchen. That was actually a facility where people go to and prepare their own food. At Galsum's Kitchen, we walked in. She greeted us with this big smile. She had her hijab, her whole robe on in blue, very pretty. Invited us into her home. She had low pillows on the floor and a low table that we all sat around, and she brought different dishes to us, like tabbouleh and steamed tomatoes are a big thing there for some reason. And that was one of the things that she brought. And she brought this dish that is yogurt and chicken combined. It's a yogurt that's strained twice and the chicken and rice. And that's a main dish of that country. And then she did.
Oh,
she did another dish. It was in a big pan that looked like maybe the size of a small tire or something. It had sides on it. It was round. And it had pastry dough, it had like a Greek pastry dough, like baklava has on the outside of it. And then inside it had chicken and onions in layers. Ooh, inside.
And that sounds,
it was wonderful. And then she bakes it in that dish and then she flips it over and serves it that way. And it's like a big cake. That's what it looks like. And you cut into it and you see the chicken and the onions.
Oh, wow. And so this is something too for people who think, I mean, we think of Jordan as one big desert, right?
Yeah.
And Nancy, you know, from living in the desert, you can grow just about anything, actually, if you get to the right water source. And so Jordan, you said you eat a lot of vegetables over there. So they really do have gardens.
Oh, yes. If you get beyond, if you go outside Petra, if you go up to the north, it's more of a garden area and a lot greener. Well, you get near the Jordan River, for one thing, which and they grow olives and they grow other things up in that area. It's much more of an agricultural area. And that was interesting, too, because we did go up to Bethany beyond the Jordan, and we went to the Jordan River. We were on the Jordan side, and the Jordan River is not very big anymore. And right across from us was Israel. And there were people immersing themselves in the water in the Jordan River. I don't know if they were baptizing or just touching the water because they wanted to be on water that they thought of as holy. And that's the only place we saw any kind of police or guards at all, was at that spot on the Jordan side.
Hmm. It's connected to Israel. So,
there.
So would you go back again?
Oh, yes. I would love to go back again. It was amazing. It really was. I learned so much about history too. When I came home, I'm still doing research on trying to remember and figure out more in depth. I'll be doing a lot more reading about the history.
Isn't it different than when we go to school and then what we learn in school and then what you get on the other side?
Oh, I know. It's just when you're actually exposed to, that was part of it too. You're walking along in these areas where, like, the Nabataeans, I think is what it is, even before the Bedouins and the Romans, and you see these ruins and you think,
wow,
well, we saw a chariot race location. We saw, you know, you see these paths and you're thinking about all the generations and generations and thousands of years of people who have walked on these roads. It's mind-boggling.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, Linda, good for you going, and thanks for sharing. Nancy, you ready to go to Jordan? Oh, she went off. I don't know. We can't hear her. I think she's been trying to fix it for a little bit here, but thank you so much, Linda, for joining us. I encourage everyone to check out Linda's article. It's on blendradioandtv.com called The 5 Wows of Jordan. So just type in Linda Milks or type in Jordan, 5 Big Wows. And also you'll see in our upcoming issue of Vacation Station Travel Magazine. And also we want to give a shout out to IFTWA, the International Food, Wine, Travel Writers Association. You can go to ifwtwa.org. And Linda, I'd say, that's a big shout out to being a member of IFTWA. You get to go to these kind of destinations. You have to apply for them, be accredited, all of that stuff. There is a process, but would you say that's one of the big highlights, being a member?
Oh, yeah. And I think IFTWA is one of the few groups that has media trips available. And I'm the media trips chair for the year, and we have 2 media trips up already. So, and we're going to do a lot more.
That's it. So if you're a travel writer and a photographer, author, check it out. Destinations too, to get on board, right? So that's a big deal. So ifwtwa.org, and of course keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. We do a show with destinations every second Tuesday, every second Friday. We do our time with travel writers, and coming up every third Friday
is a new panel writers discussion group. So check that out. So we'll be doing that next. So thank you so much, Linda. You take care and happy travels. And I don't know, you're going to have to find a camel. You're in the desert, kind of.
I'm going to South Africa next. So when you're talking about Africa, I'm going, oh, but that's on my own dime.
We live there. We live there.
Oh, I have to talk to you.
Yeah, this Nancy Anders, her magazine is in South Africa. Yay! All right. So that's the next thing. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better, you really can do it. But nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.